Take a network break, grab a virtual donut, and join us for our weekly analysis of tech news. We've got stories on F5's acquisition of Nginx, NVIDIA buying Mellanox, a Facebook outage, and more. Today's show is sponsored in part by ExtraHop, the enterprise cyber analytics company delivering performance and security from the inside out. ExtraHop offers complete visibility with machine learning to help you make quick, confident decisions about your IT environment. You can explore the ExtraHop performance platform at extrahop.com/packetpushers. And if you like Network Break, check out our other podcasts, including IPv6 Buzz, Full Stack Journey, Datanauts, and our newest show, Day 2 Cloud. It's nerdy tech analysis and compelling conversations about infrastructure, cloud, professional development, and more. And you can find them all at packetpushers.net.
Yeah, and just a short reminder that you too can sponsor the Packet Pushers. We do have some inventory left for 2019. So maybe if you're listening and you're thinking, why is my company not here? There's plenty of opportunities. So if you do have a chance to give us some financial support, that would be great.
Your ad here.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right, before we jump into the news, Greg, we have a correction from last week.
Erratum, you know, or what I did, you know,
mea culpa.
I got some stuff wrong. Last week I was talking about how drawing a parallel between Huawei and its involvement with the military and the Chinese government, and then highlighting that most of the American networking companies have ex-military people in their organizations, often up to very high levels. And I made the assertion that Chuck Robbins was on the board of Blackwater, which is not true. He's on the board of BlackRock. BlackRock is an investment company, and all it does is invest money in other things, probably not all nice, and you know, because when you're making money, the point is to make money and not be very ethical. But the point here is that he's not working for Blackwater, which was what I insinuated, so I apologize unreservedly.
Okay, so BlackRock, I think, is a hedge fund. Blackwater is like a security services company, like human security, like guns and stuff kind of company.
Yeah, that's sort of like a military services company. They specialize in hiring.
Yeah, military outsourcing.
Yeah, sort of. Some people outsource, you know, food in the local school cafeteria. Other people are outsourcing military business, you know, soldiers and, you know, yeah, mercenaries, stuff like that, you know. Right. Hard to tell the difference sometimes.
All right, and in any case, the correction has been made. Let's move on. Last week was Open Compute Week, and Facebook, they announced a new switch plus a deal with Arista.
Now, it's not every week we see a new switch arrive, so this is quite interesting. And, of course, Facebook has been building its own designs, preparing its own designs from merchant silicon, and then open sourcing them, very much so open sourcing them through the Open Compute Project, which it founded. And it's been a while since we last talked about them, and this one's pretty interesting. I'll try and run down some of the details that struck me. I'm going to leave out the pieces where they talk about their architecture, because for enterprises, I don't really see that their architecture's entirely relevant. It doesn't think it steps down into normal enterprises with a couple of hundred computers when right, they're talking like 80,000 to 160,000 in a single building and trying to find a way to build six buildings in a single site, so six data centers in a single site. So some of this is relevant to us and some of it isn't. But I think the first thing that struck me was they're using Tomahawk 3 chipsets here, not Jericho's or June's. In theory, when you're doing data center architectures, you would, or routers, you'd see people using the Broadcom Jericho or June chipsets, which are more or less the same as the Tomahawk, but they tweak the insides of the ASIC in the same way that Intel does with its CPUs, and they add more TCAM, more buffers, or mm-hmm, you know, twiddle around with various accessory features. But at the end of the day, the switching fabric is the same in that it's all 32 ports of 400 gig, or more correctly, 256 channels of 50 gig SerDes. So it's just an architecture. I thought it was interesting they're using the Tomahawk 3, which is the cheaper chipset, and also doesn't burn as much power. And I think here the power is the consideration, not so much the cost.
That makes sense when you're talking about Facebook scale, that the power consumption is an issue.
They make the point specifically here about the power, and they've only got X amount of power, and they actually got more space to build data centers than they've got power to run them. So power is a big – the power in a region is a fixed resource, and it mm-hmm, basically says that. One of the other interesting things is that they've done a non-blocking deployment design. That is, their architecture, which they're putting in, is non-blocking. Just because you've got 32 ports of 400 gig doesn't mean you do just 400 gigs up. What they're doing is making sure that there's no chance for packets to be dropped inside the switch. So they have 16 by 400s going north and 16 by 400s going south, or, you know, whatever the architecture is. If they're breaking down into 100 gigs, it'll be like 64 up and 64 down and so forth and mm-hmm, so on. Does that make sense? So
yep,
they're not facing any of the problems. Most enterprises don't buy enough switches. They should be buying too many switches, in a sense, so that their architecture is non-blocking. They should never have this, you know, 40 10 gig ports going into 440 gig ports. It just doesn't make sense anymore. Switches are cheap. It's the operating systems and the software that's expensive. The vendors should basically be giving you the switches for free at this point. And really what we should be seeing is this non-blocking architecture is standard, so you don't have to worry about costs particularly. And that's what Facebook, of course, is looking for, because their servers are generating more and more bandwidth, and they don't want the network to be a bottleneck anywhere inside of their discussion. So what they've also done is contributed the entire design of this switch called the Mini Pack and the Mini Lake to the Open Compute Project, everything. So system hardware, electrical design files, mechanical design files. So that's all of the metalwork, all of the power supply designs and all that sort of stuff. They're available and you can buy them from EdgeCore today. And interestingly, they've also worked, done a joint development with Arista. We'll talk about that in a minute. I think it's very interesting here that even though Facebook has its own operating system called FBOSS, they've obviously been working with Cumulus. So you can go out there and buy this Mini Pack switch from EdgeCore today and run Cumulus Linux on it. So if you're a tier two cloud provider and you're looking at a high density cloud deployment and you want to run a switch which has got a much more effective pricing model and very, you know, that matches this criteria. I'm not saying it's for everybody, but I do think it would be for a lot of people once it's designed right. And with overlay networking, I think most people running, say, anything north of, say, 2,000 servers in a data center would be using this or should be considering using this. I wouldn't use a branded vendor if I could get away with it. And so you can go out and get your Cumulus Linux or run the SAI Sonic OpenStack from the OCP network project, which had an announcement this week. So I think this is quite interesting as they're not just announcing it and throwing it over the fence and going, a switch, and then waiting 6 months for the other people to jump on board. The other people are already there announcing support for this hardware, which I think that's not something we've seen in previous generations.
It is interesting, and especially that they picked Cumulus. That's a nice win for Cumulus, getting some presumably advanced notifications so that they could design Cumulus to run on this platform. So maybe another indication of how the disaggregation and white box and network OSs are penetrating more of the enterprise market.
Yeah, I think there's more going on with white box than we know. We don't see press, you know, there's nobody paying for press releases.
Right. Yeah, EdgeCore's not putting out press releases.
And I don't think, you know, the Open Compute Project actually has its conference this week in Silicon Valley. And I imagine that this announcement is timed to occur at the same time as that project. Yep. But I think it's also interesting that the SAI Sonic open source stack, which is the Microsoft stack that they use, is also ready to go as part of the OCP networking project. So there's been some sort of effort here to say, yeah, we've got this great switch and we're using it and we're ready for it, but also some work at partnerships to make sure that other people pick it up. So I think there might be some pressure on Facebook here to get volumes of this shipping. Does that make sense? You need volumes of this so that EdgeCore can manufacture them at scale, and the more that's manufactured, the cheaper the price would become.
So you're saying if Facebook makes it more appealing to other folks, then Facebook gets the benefit because EdgeCore will sell more switches in volume to everyone and Facebook benefits from that volume?
I do think so. And that's where the joint development with Arista Networks comes in. What they also need is a second supplier. So obviously if you're Facebook, you don't want to be locked into a single supplier such as EdgeCore. And they've done some work with Arista here to produce, and Arista's got their manufacturing version, which is obviously, you know, OEM'd from someone in Asia, China most likely, but they've put their design magic and so forth into it. It has all of the same features, the modular line cards, although uniquely I think the Arista one is using the OSFP. They're offering a module which has the OSFP, and Arista seems to be the only vendor today supporting OSFP, the only branded vendor supporting OSFP. There must be one customer in Arista that's using those, whereas most other people are going with the QSFP DD for the 400 gig modules. One of the interesting things about the design, when I sort of poke away at it a little bit and you start thinking about it, is the Tomahawk chipset actually has 256 by 50 gig SerDes lines. That can mean that you've got 32 by 400 gig or, you know, various iterations of it. But when you're running at 100 gig, what you've actually been using is 4 by 25 gig lines or SerDes lines. And so all of these switches actually have to do a lot of work to step down from 50 gig SerDes on the ASICs. So there's one of the weird things that's happening here is the ASICs actually faster than what people need, because 400 gig isn't here. And I've been reading a lot of research reports over the last, say, 3 or 4 weeks, and they're talking about the pricing for 400 gig optical modules hasn't dropped yet. It's still way too high for widespread use. It's still very expensive. Now, maybe they're having troubles manufacturing, or maybe the market is just holding the price high while they can. And I think a lot of people had been holding off to deploy 400 gig. Like I was Facebook, I'd probably not want to be running 100 gig everywhere. I'd want to be running 400 gig. But the pricing hasn't worked out. So I think that there's some struggling going on there. So these switches all do, they have called gearboxes. They call them gearboxes in the literature, where they literally step down the 50 gig SerDes to 25 gig so that you can then bond them together to other things. And I think the Arista switch, for example, uses a very sophisticated gearbox because it actually steps down from 50 gig to 10 gig so that you can do 40 gig, which is 4x10s. And then, of course, 100 gig is 4x25s, and then 400 gig, which is 8x50s. So lots of really interesting little things going on there, sort of showing you some of the dynamics around the industry if you dig hard. I do recommend you go over and get a look at this. It's a pretty nice looking switch. A couple of things I noticed between the Arista and the Facebook one: fans are interchangeable, power supplies are interchangeable, but the management engine and the switch fabric is not. And you should be thinking about that as the future of switches, because the idea of having redundant management modules and redundant switch fabrics is pretty much over. This idea of having layer 3 switches in your data center core and running some sort of overlay network over the top means having redundant management engines and redundant silicon fabrics is not required. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize that you don't need that. You pay a lot of money for that redundancy, like something like 400%, or, you know, I'd say 4 to 10 times the cost of a switch just to have redundant management engines and redundant supervisors. And with the death of fat tree and spanning tree and, you know, that kind of, you know, chassis-based architectures, you just don't need them, because you should be able to, in an ECMP infrastructure, have the spine layer. You should just be able to walk up to it and turn it off, and everything will continue to work. You know, replace your switching fabric as you need, power it up, do your tests, and then bring it back into service, and there should be no outage whatsoever. So I think the era of, you know, redundant management engines and redundant switch engines is probably passing us by. And this might be another harbinger or another nail in that coffin, if you like that.
Well, we'll have links if you want to go check out more details, but let's move on because we got some other stories to cover. F5 announced its intent to buy Nginx for $670 million. Nginx makes software-based load balancers, web servers, app servers, web app firewalls, and more. The commercial Nginx products were sprung out of the open source project.
This is really interesting to me, and I did quite a long blog post over on Ethereum Mind this week as I sort of worked my way through it. I'll try and keep this as short as possible, but I think this is actually all about a service mesh play. I think is key is the future of networking in the data center is, and application networking in particular, has moved to the service mesh. And the days of an application delivery controller doing stuff in a physical box is, sure, that's what most people are doing today, or what I call legacy best practice. But the future is definitely going to be for new apps that are being developed. People are going to use something like an Istio with some sort of sidecar proxy, and you can pick whichever one you want. And that's looking like where the future is. And F5 knows that's coming, and it needed to have a story in the service mesh. And of course, if you're not an open source company, you're going to struggle to get attention from people who do open source, right? Like Kubernetes.
Right. And software developers who've been using Nginx for a long time and are familiar and comfortable with it, it's essentially a viable competitor of Apache. So it's got some groundwork in that DevOps community.
Yeah, I think F5 knows that it's got a branding problem in that area. Developers hate F5 because they would always request the networking team to put something on the load balancer, and it would take them 4 weeks. And of course, everybody blames the F5, right? Because that's what you do, you know? And I think if they were to sort of try and pretend that they were a developer company, they're going to struggle. Not that they couldn't do it, but they were going to have to struggle. So now they own Nginx. That gives them a branding exercise. There are lots of other things going on here. So now Nginx, of course, can use Istio, produce a very service mesh of its own using the Istio, and then put Nginx into the forwarding plane and claim how fantastically superior it is because it's got the Nginx Plus product, which it's been selling for some time. And Nginx has been quite a successful company, $650 million, 250 employees. So it's done a nice business out of monetizing software and services, which is useful because F5 hasn't done a good job of that. So do you remember, was it 2013, 2014, they bought LineRate, which was a software load balancer, and we were all very excited because we thought we'd all be able to have an F5 load balancer?
I don't remember that, honestly.
It's a long time ago.
Maybe there's a reason for that.
Yeah, it came and went. Line rate sort of burst onto the market and everybody got very excited about it. And then within just a few months, F5 bought them and started running around saying, we're going to have virtual load balance, and then eventually just disappeared. And then about a year later, they announced that they were going to refresh the hardware. And I think what F5 did here was realize that the switch to software was going to be difficult for them. So they obsoleted all of the existing hardware, then went out there and drove all the customers, like literally sales, big sales effort, hired 50% more sales force and went out there and forced all the customers, literally forced all the customers to upgrade. The hardware that was out there was perfectly fine, didn't need to be refreshed. But, you know, if you're an established incumbent brand, you can say to customers, oh, it's obsolete. We need to, you know, obsolete all of that. And you need to upgrade to the latest hardware to keep getting support. And they were very successful. They rode up the share price quite substantially. I think there's like a 250% rise in share price on the back of the hardware refresh. But nobody's going to – you're not going to be able to do that again. That's a one-trick pony, if you know what I'm saying. And
yeah, you're not going to win a lot of friends if you keep trying to play that game.
That's right. So they sort of realized that that game's up. You can't keep spanking a dead horse. So now's your chance to jump. So buying Nginx gives them a service mesh strategy, gives them some credibility in the open source movement and the cloud movement. So F5 gets to move to cloud to open source with some credibility. And they also get to extract revenue from Nginx. F5 does have a very credible sales force, a lot of relationships with enterprises. So we can go and start knocking on customers' doors and saying, we're going to sell you F5 Nginx, and it's time for you to upgrade, you know what I mean? And then start producing a product strategy. So I think this is really quite, it's quite inspired, but I still believe that this is the last person at the dance type thing. F5 and Nginx have both been attempting to sell themselves on the market for some time, according to various reports that I've read, and certainly that's been obvious for a while. I think F5 was hoping that Cisco would buy it at one point and pitch themselves around to anybody or looking for an investor to take them out. And they haven't been successful, so I think they've ended up sort of dancing with each other because there's no one else less for them to dance with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's a good move for F5 because they see the writing on the wall, applications being developed in the cloud or in a new microservices architecture. The service mesh is going to be important to that. You're not going to put a hardware load balancer or ADC in that architecture, which kind of leaves them out in the cold. So Nginx is a great pickup for them. There are concerns that we've seen in social media and some of our back channels about what might happen with the open source project. And Nginx already also had sort of garnered a little bit of issue from the open source community because they work from a sort of open, I forget what the exact term is, but it's open plus proprietary.
Yeah, yeah. They have the free version, which is out there, which gets no features and not very little resources. And then they have Nginx Plus, which is where they put all their good stuff.
Yeah.
And you have so to pay to upgrade.
So there's a little bit of friction with the open source community in that game that Nginx is playing. But overall, it makes a lot of sense to me for F5. And I don't know if you remember, but back in December, we had talked about Aspen Mesh, which was sort of an internal startup or Skunk's Works coming out of F5 to be to play in that service mesh area. I don't know what's going to happen with Aspen Mesh, if it'll be folded into Nginx or they're just being done with it or they're carried on. I don't know. I haven't seen anything, but
I would say that this is where they tried to develop in themselves and realized they haven't. It's not going to work.
That's my thought, yeah.
So they tried it out.
Like, let's buy it.
Yeah. Like all good enterprise IT companies, they can't innovate themselves. They just can't, right? They think they can. They fool themselves that they're innovating and then fail miserably at it, as always, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you've got this incumbent base and you focus on selling, you really aren't a technology company. You're a supermarket. You don't make the bread. You just put it on the shelves and sell it. And I think F5's fallen into that model as well over time. So the F5 share price fell by 5%. I think it's got more to go as analyst firms downgrade the stock because they believe this is going to be a high-risk strategy. Their growth has been slowing for some time and the market's been holding steady on the share price, although their profit margins are large. So F5 is a $9.5 billion company. They're making a $650 million acquisition, so they're going to do that out of cash. And it'll be interesting to see how it works out. Will F5 get a credible open source strategy and a foot in the cloud that they can use to stay in, you know, in a preeminent position, which they're in today, on application delivery? Or does Google Compute with Kubernetes and their Istio implementation, their service mesh? Or, you know, if people go into the cloud, why wouldn't I just use the service mesh that AWS, Azure, Google are giving me? Why am I trying to buy another one to layer over the top of it? Questions yet to be answered.
Right. And then I can hear the murmurings of multi-cloud and a uniform substrate, et cetera, that they can throw back. But we'll leave that discussion for another day.
Yeah, multi-cloud.
Well, are you done with F5? Can we move
on? I think we are done with it. We should F5. It's a really interesting shift here is that application networking, F5's had this position where it's been unassailable because it does application networking and nobody else does. And then all of a sudden Service Mesh came along and just went, that whole idea's done. And not that you're seeing that on the ground, but that's where it's heading to. Nobody's talking about using commercial load balancers to do load balancing in the future. They're all talking about using service meshes. So they have to move.
Right. Yeah, this is a future play. F5 is trying to protect itself from becoming obsolete. Yeah, absolutely.
Has to, yeah.
All right, moving on. This is not the only acquisition. Chipmaker NVIDIA that's buying Mellanox for $6.9 billion. NVIDIA is best known for its GPUs, and Mellanox makes switching silicon, Ethernet, and storage networking gear and more.
So another long, long discussion here because I think this is also very interesting in the sense that Intel had been trying to buy Mellanox for a while. We'd seen rumors suggesting, you know, $5.4 billion. So somewhere along the line, someone's managed to squeeze another $1.5 billion out of this, which is
kudos.
Yeah. Activist investor Starboard Ventures, which we've seen quite often in this stories, came along and agitated for a sale. And in this case, they've been successful. So the thing to know here, I think, is that Mellanox has four product lines. Most people don't know that. A lot of people who listen to the podcast might know about Mellanox switches, but they also have these smart network adapters or NICs, which are very popular with cloud companies. And what I think you need to look at is you need to see these smart NICs as co-processors or network acceleration engines that can be put into service. And of course, NVIDIA's GPUs are co-processors. So my belief is that what they're really buying Mellanox for is the smart NICs, which is key. They also get some InfiniBand technology for the high-performance compute market. Obviously, NVIDIA produces a lot of gear for the high-performance compute market. So having Mellanox there, they can do some convergence, get rid of some headcount, you know, sales overlap, already doing solutions together. Mellanox has a silicon photonics research and manufacturing arm. So they actually manufacture their own SFP modules and active cables. So if you're buying a Mellanox network, it's actually possible to go and buy the NICs for Mellanox, the optics and the copper cables, the DACs that you want, and they're manufactured by Mellanox in Mellanox factories. And then you can buy a switch to plug them into, which is they're the only company really doing that sort of end-to-end approach. Mm-hmm. And that's very suitable for a high-performance compute who doesn't want to have too many vendors in the pie. They don't want to be hand-assembling these things themselves. They really want somebody to come in and deliver them 1,000, 5,000, 10,000 servers in a single contract and guarantee them because they don't want to spend time fussing around with hardware. So it works. So I think what we're seeing here is NVIDIA getting deeper into data center acceleration, and particularly accelerated networking and the possibility of data center interconnects. So NVMe over fabrics is going to be good for GPUs, I think, because you can start to use RDMA, things like CIX or other technologies that do direct in-memory access between chassis, which will accelerate GPU consumption. It also means that NVIDIA is now an InfiniBand company, leaving NVIDIA versus Intel. And that's exactly, I think, where NVIDIA wants to be, don't you think?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. I think InfiniBand and at Intel has sort of been there for some time, and they've seen that as a way to sell that with the CPUs in the high-performance compute. They're a big money thing. So there's a lot of synergies there. And as I said before, Activist Investor had taken about 2 years, and they have spent $250 million buying 11% of the shares and sold the shares for $116 million so far, but still have a holding worth $318 million, which means they've probably earned about a 300% return in 2 years. So
not too shabby.
Active investors, you know, sort of driving Mellanox to do something. And at the end of the day, the only way to get the returns the active investor wanted was to sell the company. I would have liked to have seen Mellanox go further and faster on its own, I would rather think. What can customers expect? I think that there won't be much change. I think NVIDIA will continue to sell Mellanox. The challenge here is that if they were looking to go into the enterprise, they might not, because I don't think GPUs have much play in the enterprise. NVIDIA, I think, is much more focused on the cloud scales, offering GPU clusters and acceleration engines and, you know, crypto, and having Mellanox as a part of that might see Mellanox, you know, double down on its relationships with Azure and the other cloud providers for selling them smart NICs and storage fabrics and stuff like that. And I think that's where it's going to go. We might see Mellanox fade out into the distance. We'll see.
That's interesting. It was just, I think, last year I was at a networking field day event where Mellanox was one of the presenters. They did a thing with Cumulus talking about, I believe it was EVP and fabrics for the data center. So little push and pull here in terms of direction.
I mean, they could still stay, you know, but they haven't really focused on reaching the enterprise. And with Arista coming back to the enterprise after playing in the cloud, and you know, Mellanox has these high-end switches, getting them into enterprise data centers is not an easy ask. And they've got so much easy money to make in high-performance compute because everybody's building HPC clusters for AI and machine learning. They might be better off just focused on doing that. And so we may see them take a breath and say, we'll just put the enterprise on hold for a little while we wander off and, you know, focus on that.
See what we can get out of HPC,
I wonder. That's just speculation, but I think that makes more sense that they would focus their sales efforts over in a market that wants them rather than enterprise, which is probably much harder nut to crack.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, moving on. Citrix Systems has been hit by hackers who may have exfiltrated as much as 6 terabytes of corporate data. That's according to a story in the Register. The Register says the FBI has informed Citrix about the breach, and Citrix is in fact notifying customers. The story originally came to light when a security company called ReSecurity broke the news.
So lots of confusion here, and I got caught out here. It turns out ReSecurity is probably knows nothing. They are basically a two-man security company. They posted a blog post accusing Iran of causing the problem, and basically nobody else believes them. They think they're basically all idiots and they should have shut their mouths. So the actual so any claims about how much data that was taken and stuff like that is basically made from a company that has no credibility. So really the only things that we know is that the FBI has informed Citrix that they had a breach.
Yep.
The breach was probably done using password spraying, that is just trying usernames and passwords, and they've actually managed to breach Citrix that way. There's no idea how much lateral movement there was inside of Citrix, and the company hasn't said anything. I imagine they're going through a forensic phase. But what does concern me is it was the FBI who rocked up at Citrix, and Citrix hadn't detected this. They had no idea that the intrusion was going on, and they apparently had been. You sort of read between the lines and you get the sense in the Citrix blog post that the attackers had been inside of Citrix for quite some time.
The Citrix blog post really doesn't say much.
No.
As they note, and fairly, that investigations take time and they want to get all the details straight before they start talking about things. But pretty much the only thing they say is that, quote, it appears that the hackers may have accessed and downloaded business documents, but there's no specification on what kind of information they have taken or how much, so that 6 terabytes is coming from the Register.
So we'll wait and see how it works out, but it doesn't look good. Vendors, we, you know, we rely on vendors to have security, that the supply chain is secure. And if vendors get breached like this, then that challenges our belief in what vendors tell us. If we choose to trust them, we have to trust them. If they demonstrate that they're getting breached on a regular basis, then you might as well go and use open source. Because there's no difference between a brand name and an open source. The supply chain's a mess. Why play for somebody else's supply chain that's messed up?
It's certainly always embarrassing when a tech company gets breached,
yes.
Although it does happen to everyone.
And watch out for security companies claiming to be have secret knowledge or that they can attribute something, because I got caught out by this company and I had to go back onto my blog post on Ethereum Mine where I raised this and basically delete all the stuff about ReSecurity because it seems that they're just flat out making stuff up. Not that that's – and you can't actually detect it because they can make assertions saying our secret knowledge we've seen in deep, deep – network, you know, the dark web, and
our AI-infused dark web scanner has detected activity.
But it turns out they have a long history of claiming stuff that's just not true. So some caution here, don't follow it up and don't follow the link. You know, we won't even post to the blog post that they come from because they're not worth it. We don't want to give them any credibility.
Yeah, we do have a link to Citrix official blog about it, and we'll stay on top of this and see if any more details emerge as their investigation proceeds. All right, speaking of security, we got a message from our sponsor, ExtraHop. They are an enterprise cyber analytics company delivering performance and security from the inside out. IT and network operations teams are responsible for managing the applications and infrastructure that modern enterprises depend on, but SDN, cloud, and shadow IT create new blind spots, especially when it comes to applications that can't be instrumented. ExtraHop is the leader in network analytics. They help teams like yours rise above the noise of tool sprawl and enterprise complexity. They offer complete visibility with machine learning to help you make quick, confident decisions about your IT environment. You can explore the ExtraHop performance platform at extrahop.com/packetpushers. And if you want to get a deeper dive into ExtraHop's machine learning capabilities, we did a show with them. You can check out Priority Queue episode 128. gets into details about how they're using ML to parse packet and flow data so you can get some more actionable intelligence.
Yeah, you can actually use it for security too, because they're capturing all the packets off the wire. Depending on how you set up ExtraHop, it can help you with security and threat alerts, and also help you with doing the forensic analytics, the post-event stuff. You have to set it up that way, but you could talk to ExtraHop about how they might be able to help you with that and see if they've got the tools that suit your particular environment.
Yep. Check it out. ExtraHop.com/packetpushers. All right. We had talked earlier about Open Compute Project and their conference going on. We've got some more news coming out of there. Big Switch Networks. They're demoing a network operating system that combines Open Network Linux and the Microsoft developed SONiC. And the NOS also bundles in free range routing as the routing stack. The software package is available for download from Big Switch.
So Open Network Linux has been around for quite some time. Yeah, Big Switch, of course, has been the key contributor to ONL as a base operating system, but it's been very much focused around what Big Switch does, which is using a flow-centric programming model, which suits their Big Switch Fabric and BigMon products. The ONL project is basically taking Microsoft SONiC, which is a software for open networking in the cloud. Bit of a stretch, but okay for your acronym, fine. and that actually straps on normal networking capabilities, so some more how you get the data into the chip forwarding plane is then carried out in SONiC. And then strapping FRR on top of that means that we've now actually got a fully fledged open operating system that might work for you. It's also, you know, and it's supported by a range of big name vendors putting it all together. So it might be something that you could choose for your internal environment. This has been going on for quite a few years now. So like most open source projects, they sort of hum along quietly in the background. And if they just quietly fade away, then you don't worry about them. You don't hear. But this one keeps coming back. Open Network Linux just keeps coming back and keeps getting attention, keeps getting the features. And I think particularly, you know, the FRR, which Cumulus has contributed to by combining it with SONiC and now with Open Network Linux for the underlying operating system and the ASIC capabilities, pretty good stuff. Looks like it could be a very interesting and over time could be easily something that becomes strategic across more companies.
If you're looking for disaggregation and white box running your own, running a network operating system of your choice, you've got more choices than ever. We had already talked about Cumulus earlier. We've seen SnapRoute and Arcus come out, debuting with their own network operating systems, and now this option from Big Switch as well. So lots of choices.
Yeah, and you should take them up. You should. I'd like to think that people should get out there and test them out. Now, it may not be something that you deploy in the core of your network, but there are certainly places in your campus or in other places in your network where you could start to look at these. So it doesn't have to be a mission-critical network to use this. And cut a lot of corners if you recognize that you have many networks in a in an organization and some of them don't need to have, you know, be done the same way as you've always done them. And that's what you should consider.
That's right. Moving on, Facebook suffered a significant outage that affected the social media platform as well as its other products, including Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger. Facebook blames the outage on a server configuration change. They pushed that out in a tweet, and that's all the details that we've got so far.
The reason that I call this out is that someone from a brand vendor hopped onto media and started sending out press releases claiming that it was a BGP routing problem. Turns out that there was a Facebook problem in some small country somewhere with the BGP, but that wasn't actually underlying the issue, and they later walked that back. Pretty embarrassing for them. In this case, to have a server configuration change affect everything inside of Facebook, like that's tens of thousands of servers, seems unlikely. I'm more likely to believe that someone made a server configuration change for one of the key front ends, networking front ends, something like a load balancer layer or something like that, and somehow it blew up everything. Because normally when Facebook configures things, my understanding is the way that Facebook works is a network developer writes some code and then ships it to two or three devices, and if it's still working 4 hours later and failed nothing, then it goes out to more and then it goes out to more. It's pretty unlikely that something's going to propagate across the entire infrastructure and cause problems. They've got capabilities. So if somebody's, you know, caused a problem somehow and hasn't been detected, that's going to cause a lot of embarrassed looks and faces. But in this case, it doesn't seem to have been the network. So, hey, it wasn't the network. We get to say that once.
Woohoo! Happy day.
Yeah.
All right, our last story for the day is a surfing dog story. Reuters is reporting that the Israeli city of Tel Aviv has installed new crosswalk lights that are designed to attract the attention of so-called smartphone zombies. These LED lights are embedded in the ground at crosswalks. So if you're standing there walking, looking at your phone, you might actually see this blinking red light flashing at you saying, don't walk in the street because you're about to get hit by a car.
Yeah, I don't normally walk with my face in my phone, although I have done it a couple of times when I've been in doing specific things. So I actually kind of like this. I wonder, but I wonder visually, what does that look like? If you've got red lights in the pavement on the left, does that get confused with the red light? I like the idea, just questioning the execution here.
Well, Reuters did interview someone who went across this new LED lit street, and the person totally didn't notice it because they were on their phone.
So. But other
but
than that,
photo,
what a
there's
great
a photo
idea.
With a story yeah. if you want to check it out. But folks, please pick your heads up.
Yeah, for sure.
Now and then. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of Network Break. Let's stay healthy out there. Greg, where can folks get more from you?
You can follow me on the Twitter. Is that Ethereal Mind? I'm on LinkedIn. I'm doing more of an effort to push content onto LinkedIn if you actually want to follow my LinkedIn site there. And I've also been pushing some of the thinking as I prepare for the show every week as blog posts on etherealmind.com.
Yeah, you've had a hot etherealmind.com presence this week.
Yeah, well, there's so much to research there. Thinking about the F5 versus Nginx, I think that's actually a rather structural shift. And the Mellanox thing was also interesting in the sense that it presages some changes in the business and the technology market. So, you know, the impact of cloud just really, you know, there are companies now who exist just to sell stuff to clouds, cloud uh-huh. companies, you know, like the tier one, tier two. And everything else just dribbles down to the enterprise. And I think it's really interesting to see this transition going on.
Well, I'm Drew Conry Murray. I'm on Twitter at Drew_CM and I blog at packetpushers.net. Thank you to our sponsor, ExtraHop. And of course, thank you for joining us for another episode of Network Break. If you like the show, tell a friend, leave a recommendation on Facebook or on iTunes, and check out our membership program. That's at ignition.packetpushers.net. It's got free and paid membership options and includes the Human Infrastructure Magazine. And we just did our virtual design clinic and we'll be uploading videos from the virtual design clinic to Ignition as well as YouTube. So if you're interested, you can go check those out. As always, thanks for listening.